He put his arm around me in the car and he says, okay, I'm going to tell this story one time from start to finish and you can't interrupt me. You have to just let me tell the story because I've never told it before. He just started crying and telling me this horrific story about what had happened to his mom and his nephew and his sister. I couldn't believe it.
Faith. By definition, it's something that is felt with strong conviction without tangible evidence of its existence. Many claim to have it. But how do we attain it? It can't be held. It can't be sold. But it can be passed down. Faith is invaluable to those who feel it. How is it that this belief can unite us regardless of our differences? It's because of conviction, that feeling inside that links so many, from the far corners of the earth to the closest reaches of our neighborhoods. Faith is all around us. Faith springs from a glorious past forward to a promising future. The faith that those who not so quietly defeated rivals and redefined record books would inspire their brethren of today to reach such epic accomplishments. And all along, there are those who cheer. In their minds, they envision. In their hearts, they believe. And because of that, they are simply known as the faithful. Kermit Alexander's story begins like so many athletes' stories do. A young man being raised in tough surroundings by incredible people. Despite living in one of LA's toughest sections, the projects of Watts, he and his 10 brothers and sisters rose through the adversity around them and used the family unit to prevail.
We moved to California after my dad went into the service. He became a Marine and went to the Second World War. So we moved to California to be near him. Southern California was a treat for me since I was born in Louisiana. The most important thing about my family was they were very religious. My mom and dad both were very religious, and they thought that our life was centered around our religion. So faith for us was an important thing. The next best thing was education. And in order to be successful, we needed to be educated.
Kermit followed his family's advice and coupled his intellect with exceptional athleticism and found himself at UCLA. Alexander was out of the shadows of the Watts Towers and into the shining spotlight. Kermit's talents carried him into the NFL as he was drafted 8th overall by the 49ers in the 1963 NFL Draft. Speed, tenacity, and instinct defined Alexander's style, and the ability to play almost anywhere on the field made him an incredible player. In 1968, Kermit enjoyed his greatest year as a pro, tallying 9 interceptions and earning Pro Bowl honors. After ranking amongst the best to play in the defensive secondary for the 49ers, Kermit's career led him to the Los Angeles Rams and back home. Involved, as he and his family had always been, he began to lend his time in the community, and that included working with neighborhood kids on the local football team. With great aspirations to further himself and his career, Kermit Alexander was involved in many endeavors and was determined to blaze a path off the football field, like he had done so many times on it. Embarking on a new venture with his alma mater, he was going to join the coaching staff and bring talent to the Bruins football program. That was until he heard the news.
We went from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, because it was at that point in time when my family got massacred.
August 31st, 1984. A home invasion took place at Kermit's mother's house. Members of the Crips entered the home early that morning, and gang members shot Kermit's mother, Abora, in the head. They then murdered Kermit's sister, Deetra, along with his nephews, Damani and Damon, who were asleep in their beds.
But as the investigation continued, we found out it was a mistaken identity, but a hired killing. And the killers, who it turned out were illiterate, went to the wrong house, read the address incorrectly, and they ended up at my mother's house, murdering her, my sister, and my two nephews. Initially, we thought that the whole family was somebody that was targeted, and so we didn't have any idea whether or not we should just hold up and pray, because we were scared to death that we were next on the list. I walked the streets looking for the people that had committed the murders. And I knew the streets. I had grown up in there. I attached myself to various gang members, trying to follow them around, trying to get them to tell me what they knew. Some I threatened, some I bribed, some I manhandled to try and figure out, but I couldn't get any answers. Nobody knew. That was the horror of my life at that period of time. Well, that affected me years afterwards, because there were members in my family who thought I was a guilty person involved in the death of our family members. And so I was estranged from them. I was estranged from all the networking that I had achieved prior to that. So I was closed off at UCLA. I was closed off from the NFL. I was closed off from the probation department, whom I had worked for in San Francisco. And so I was a man wandering the world looking for a place to settle. And that was very, very difficult for me, because I was always attached to my family and my teammates. And so all of a sudden I was this recluse who was trying to figure out what it is he was going to do with his life.
While Kermit sifted through the devastation that had occurred, his situation took an even more improbable turn. A troubled player named Tyquan Cox, that had played against the Pop Warner team Kermit co-founded, was the man who murdered Alexander's family. As a young boy, Cox had showed signs of rage and anger on the field a decade earlier, and Kermit, like many, had noticed but had not intervened.
When you talk about families and responsibilities in neighborhoods and communities, you have to bring up the point the responsibility for raising children belongs to the community in addition to the family. You don't raise a child by yourself. You raise a child in conjunction with his teachers, his coaches, and everyone that comes in contact with him. My family got decimated by a youngster. As I found out later, I could have done something about it. He was on a team. He was a brilliant little player. He had everything going for him, except he was incorrigible. I could have gone to him and tried and helped him any way that I could, and I didn't. For some reason, I took the easy way out. I pointed my finger at that kid and said, somebody needs to help him. But it's a funny thing, when you point your finger at somebody, three fingers point back at you. And I ignore that to the detriment of my family. As God would have it, he's going to make me learn a lesson because I ignored somebody that needed help that I didn't help at the time they needed it.
Kermit was living probably one of the best lives somebody back then could have lived. He grew up in this area where many, many people had a negative future. He grew up in a family that was super conducive to not entering that gang culture and to not falling into these traps. He was living life as life should be led. Everything was perfect for him. And then, bam, in the course of an hour, it all unraveled.
After the tragedy, which four members of his family are murdered in their home, the most kind of intimate of crimes anyone could ever imagine, Kermit became very insulated. He walled himself off. He wouldn't trust anyone.
Kermit Alexander, who spent 7 years in the defensive backfield for the 49ers, endured tragedy that few can comprehend. The murder of his family had a profound impact on his psyche and his ability to completely trust those who cared for him. One such person was Kermit's longtime girlfriend, Tammy Clark. Tammy and Kermit spent 10 years together before Tammy's faith and a trip to one of the world's most impoverished countries changed the course of their relationship.
During that time, I started broadcasting on a Christian radio station, and they came in and asked me if I wanted to go to Haiti as a relief effort, and I said I'd love to. And the minute I got there, I wanted to go home. We would go out to a little place called Cité Soleil, which is probably the poorest city in Port-au-Prince. It's actually built on a landfill. So as dirt and debris gets swept into the port, it solidifies, and that becomes what people build homes on. I knew that Haiti was bigger than anything I had ever imagined. I had no power, no influence, no money, nothing to change Haiti. So on the second day, they took me out to a little place called Mission of Hope, and I met this little boy.
And I was in the process of trying to get her to marry me. And so she said she couldn't talk about it till she got back. So when she got back, we got together and reminisced about what she had done and where we were going to go. And she said, "You can't ask me to marry you because I'm not sure I can." I said, "Oh, Lord, you need to go to Haiti with me. And if you and this little boy connect, then you can ask me to marry you." So we set up the trip. She took me on a ride through Haiti into the mission. She said, "I want you to wait here by the bus, and I'll go in and find Clifton." Well, while she was going into the building looking for Clifton, I saw this little boy peeking around the corner, running from the building to go play with the other kids in the yard that were playing soccer. I just said, "Clifton." And he stopped, and I said, "Clifton." He turned around and ran and jumped in my arms. That's how I met Clifton. So I grabbed Clifton by the hand, and we went looking for Tammy.
So a bond was made between the three. Shortly after, Kermit and Tammy were wed. Their goal was to bring Clifton home with them to California.
We were connected in some way, and I didn't know what that some way was going to be. Never in my wildest imagination did I think it was a restoration story between Kermit and I. But when Kermit saw the opportunity to not turn his back again, he was willing to go with me. He had let this little boy down who had 10 years later grown up to be this killer, and he swore he would never, ever let that happen again. And so when he had a chance to make a difference in Clifton's life, he embraced it.
Reflecting on Tyquan Cox and how complacency to help a troubled young man had altered the course of so many lives, Kermit would not allow history to repeat itself. He was healed. His heart had been given to both Tammy and Clifton, and Kermit would finally have a family. Finalizing the adoption was paramount to the beaming new couple, but one thing wasn't final. There would be more surprises along the way.
We started going to this old orphanage where Clifton kept playing with these one particular group of kids. And so he introduced us to these kids, and we thought they were friends, and they all wanted to wear our sunglasses and put on our sunscreen. And so we asked him, "Who are your friends, Clifton?" And he says, "These aren't my friends. These are my brother and sisters." And we went, "Oh, Lord." And when we realized the conditions that they were living in, it was overwhelming.
I come from a large family. You see a child that needs help, you go help. You see a family that needs help with their children, you go help them. It's a family trait for us. There was no way I could do it for Clifton and not them. And the easiest way to do it was to bring them all home. Either we were going to move to Haiti or we were going to move them all to the United States.
At that point, Kermit thought, we can't take him away from them. And the oldest boy, Jameson, said, "Can you take a picture of us together since we're never going to see Clifton again?" And at that point, Kermit said, "We take one, we take them all."
The Alexanders had made their decision. They would now be proud parents of five beautiful children. But the course to adopt from Haiti was unbearably slow, taking a half a decade and more than a dozen trips back and forth for Kermit and Tammy. During that process, on January 12, 2010, as the Alexanders were desperately trying to build their family's foundation, Haiti's foundation began shaking.
Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, has been hit by a major earthquake.
"We need more people down here!"
In just one short minute, the capital, Port-au-Prince, was torn apart.
The natural disaster took nearly 230,000 lives, destroyed a quarter of Haiti's schools, and shattered the island's already impoverished people. It hit home for the Alexanders as the children were on the island, and Tammy and Kermit were unable to connect with them for days. Upon learning that they were alive and unharmed, the Alexander family also learned that, fortunately, the five kids were granted humanitarian parole out of Haiti. 2 short weeks later, they were in the arms of Kermit and Tammy. Understanding Kermit Alexander's journey goes way beyond football and faithfulness. It delves deep into the heart of what it is to feel love, loss, and to experience regret, and finally, to be redeemed. It is a story that needs to be heard, a story that needs to be told. Just recently, the Alexanders decided to do just that, as they put their amazing lives on display, alongside two Bay Area authors and professors at San Francisco State University.
The book is an unconventional kind of memoir. It is the amazing story of Kermit Alexander, his rise to NFL star, his descent into a kind of tragedy and nihilistic despair, and then his recovery through a finding of love and a new family.
The amount of research that we put into this was tremendous. I mean, we're writing with gang cops down in Los Angeles. We're riding through Haiti. We're interviewing dozens and dozens of people. We're going through tens of thousands of pages of court transcripts. I mean, honestly, out of the 4 years or so that this book took, you know, probably at least a couple years was just full on research.
The title is The Valley of the Shadow of Death. And this is from Psalm 23. The valley is a test. You're put in this dark place. How do you come out of it? Taekwon Cox, the killer, chose the kind of stardom of the streets, violence, destruction, and Kermit chose the creative route of hard work, a degree, a career.
The Valley of the Shadow of Death is about choices, decisions, and consequences. For the faithful and fans of storytelling everywhere, authors Alex Gerald and Jeff Snipes hope that it becomes a life lesson motivating those who read it.
I'd like them to take this story for the inspiration it is, that you can hit rock bottom, you can hit a really low moment. Very few people are ever going to go through the kind of tragedy and ordeal he did, but to show how you can come out of that, and that even later in life, at age 70, you can make a life-changing decision that's going to put you back on the right trajectory.
Sometimes you have to be patient to persevere. In this case, you know, decades until really Kermit was whole again.
The time that I spent with Kermit genuinely made me a better person. He is an amazing guy. The more you get to know him, the more you realize the depth, the life experience, the intelligence. This was a pro football star. To quote San Francisco's chief of police, who was a big fan of his, he said he was Ronnie Lott before there was Ronnie Lott. You look on the record books, he's still number three all time in interceptions for the Niners. Faithful means to me loyal, something that will get you through hard times. And if ever there was a man of faith, it's Kermit. If you wanted me to use one word to define him, it's loyal. But I'd also say it's something that really goes along with the whole 49er tradition. Kermit is just class.
One of the best things that's ever happened in my life is meeting him, meeting his wife, meeting his siblings, meeting his kids. He's a role model to me. I believe that if he hadn't listened to Tammy, and if he hadn't gone to Haiti, and if he hadn't met Clifton, and if he hadn't made the decision to go full throttle and adopt these kids, I think that Kermit may not even be with us today.
Redemption. It's an incredible thing. Kermit Alexander's story is one of redemption and also of perseverance. Living through the horror of family members lost, feeling empty and alone, Kermit endured. His legacy will not be his incredible accomplishments on the football field, but the ones he and Tammy have made off the field. Their children, their family, their selfless deeds will be what defines the Alexanders for generations of faithful to remember.
I'll describe my parents as loving and kind and caring.
Amazing and wonderful people.
It took a lot of work for them to bring all of us here, not just one.
When I was in Haiti, like, all the kids over there would, like, dream about and think about coming to America.
The opportunities we have now, from living in Haiti is way different because we have the chance of dreaming big, going to school every day and learn. It's like a great feeling because you never had it before.
I have always dreamed about going to college. I am really happy to have the opportunity to just be who I want to be.
And the opportunity to play sports and enjoy life.
Amazing, like, to have my brothers and sister with me, laughing and joking around and speaking our language.
We got to spend time and laugh and play games, eat together, which is a great part of being in a family.
To be able to be with them, sleep with them, and then wake up with them is like a dream come true, being there for each other. That's what families are. That's all we are now.
Somehow, by adopting five kids when he's nearly 70 years old, that freed him. And he said, I went down there to save Clifton. The five of them actually saved me.
Kezar was unique in that it was like it was a high school stadium. As a 49er, when I walked out on the field for the first time in San Francisco, I was playing in the college All-Star game, and it was a sellout. And I thought, how neat is this? Because the place was electric. We played a real good game there. The game's over. Now I'm back playing with the 49ers a few weeks later, and the place is still electric. It was an intimate stadium. There was about 45, maybe 50,000 people there. And they were all 49er fans. And so it made it really easy to play in the game because they kept you lifted.